Welcome to In My Own Words, where we stand on our opinions like I stand from Coming to America being a good movie. A really good movie. Kinda. Maybe. Okay, let's talk about it. Welcome, welcome, welcome back to another episode of the In My Own Words podcast. I'm your host, Tony R. Sanders, here for some more laughs, some more fun, some more conversation with my friends. Happy Thursday, everybody. Super happy to have you guys here. We got to talk about Coming to America, right? That's the thing that we got to do. Pretty sure that's on the docket today. Before I get into that, though, and I will get into that, I promise. So if you're listening to this specifically or watching this specifically for Coming to America, we're going to talk about that. But does anybody know what's going on with Piers Morgan? Does anybody know? I just want to know. I don't really know what's going on. I will be honest. I don't know about monarchies. I don't know about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. Is he the Duchess? Is that what the title is? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how this works. The extent of how this works is what I learned in Coming to America, the sequel. That's all that's all I know. Is Prince Harry like the bastard son? I mean, he's not a bastard, but didn't he leave and go to America? Is the Prince Harry story really Coming to America in a way, in a weird way? Like, you know how, okay, let's just talk about it all. Can we talk about it all? Can we talk about it all? Okay, let's talk about it all. Listen, I'm going to get to a more specific review of Coming to America in a second, but I need to talk about all of this together because I can't, the only associations I have in my mind of what to make of Oprah sitting down with Prince Harry and Meghan and then Piers Morgan storming off his TV show that I didn't know that he had and then quitting and The View getting him out of here. And like, you know, the only way I can make sense of it is Coming to America, okay? So correct me if I'm wrong. I may be wrong. I don't know. But I'm going to try to put all this together, and then we'll do a more directed, specific, guided perspective of Coming to America. So, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movie, I gave you almost a week. As a matter of fact, it had an early release on Thursday, so I gave you a week. If you haven't seen it by now, you don't want to see it. And if you don't want to see it, then you probably don't care if I spoil it. Okay, you know the part in the movie where Eddie's son, right, Prince Hakeem's son, realizes the reason Eddie was so quick going about getting him back to America and having a son and having him marry Wesley Snipes' character's daughter, Teyana Taylor, right, and having that whole thing go down so quickly. Once he realized the whole plot and how he was just being used as a pawn, he left because he felt like his family didn't care for him. He felt like they weren't protecting him. He felt like they were putting him in harm's way for their own sake. And he didn't have the protection or the love or the care that he needed there to be empowered to be who he was. And so he had to escape and come to America to be able to do that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that the same thing Prince Harry did? Wasn't he over there chilling and wanted to do his own thing and his family wouldn't let him and they wouldn't support him? And they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't allow him to be who he was. He didn't feel like he had the protection that he needed there, the support, the security that he had there to be who he was truly. And so he left and he came to America. Isn't the Prince Harry story just white coming to America? Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. I didn't watch the Oprah interview. The Oprah interview was on at the same time as like the 3-point shootout and the dunk contest in the All-Star game. I mean, if I'm weighing my options here, I don't even care about what's going on over there. Now, when I say I don't care, I'm not saying like some of the things that she talked about weren't sensitive. I heard through, you know, social media clips, stuff like that. I heard that she talked about being suicidal and her mental health and how the media was making things worse and not helping her, and how the family wasn't accepting of their kid and the racism and all those things are very near and dear to me, right? But as far as the business of what's going on in the kingdom, the business of what's going on in that country, and like, I don't I don't know what to tell you. I don't care on a macro level. On a micro level, when it comes to her feelings and what she's getting, anyone, you know, you'd be a fool, an idiot to say that you don't care. You'd have to be a cold-hearted person to not care. But on a macro level, when we talk about that family and what the, I just don't care. I'm sorry, Oprah. I love you. I just don't care. But from what I'm hearing, it seems like he wanted to come to America to be able to get the stuff right and be able to live to be who he is. And he stayed, and now he's complaining about the conditions. Am I getting this correct? I feel like I'm not getting this correct. It seems too similar to the movie line. So at this point, I guess what needs to happen is the queen or whoever needs to prepare the royal jet and come get Harry and make sure that he feels like he could do what he needs to do. They need to bring America or Canada or wherever he is to Zamunda or wherever they are. I don't know, guys. I don't know what's going on. I do know this, and this is what was interesting to me. I saw a clip of Piers Morgan getting pressed on his show about how he's been hard against Meghan Markle. And to be honest, I didn't know that. I don't keep up with anything that Piers Morgan does. But what was funny is to see him be unhappy with the situation and walk off his show, right? When the only thing that was on his line was maybe his ego and his reputation, but couldn't understand them walking away from a situation where they felt like their child was on the line and preparing his pregnant wife and then his soon-to-be child and their security and safety was on the line. He couldn't understand that, but he understands being able to walk off his own show because he's frustrated, right? And then right under that, there was another clip of him being on someone's talk show talking about how the night he met, or the night Meghan Markle met Prince Harry was the same night that she went out on a date with him. First of all, you the way that you're, I don't know if this story is true. It sounded like a lie. It sounded like it was written by the same people who wrote Coming to America. But it sounds like, it didn't sound like he was being truthful. But the way he painted her, even in that moment of saying, like, I liked her a lot and she ghosted me, he painted her as, like, kind of being a little loose with the dating scene. You know what I mean? Like, his story was that they went on a date, okay? And at the end of the date, he put her into a cab. Now, he kept saying, he talked a lot about the drink she was having. She had a couple dirty martinis. She had one of these and one of this. He thought that he was lining it up. He thought he was aiming down sight at something where, like, it was going to go his way at the end of the night. And when he put her in the cab safely, apparently, you know, I guess she was good. He put her in a cab. She ended up leaving him and going to another party where she met Prince Harry. That's the story that Piers Morgan is on. And he never heard from her again. To this day, she hasn't spoken words of Piers Morgan. But he talks about her all the time. He runs onto his TV show to talk about her and bash her all the time. Right? Sounds a little fragile, doesn't it? It sounds a little like you can't be the guy that the girl didn't want to talk to in high school. And now, like, you're doing the PA announcements and you call her out during the PA. And you can't do that. You can't be that guy. You can't be the guy that, like, you know, you got a little news anchor job now, and every now and then you want to send shots at this chick that ain't even thinking about you no more, bro. You can't do that, Piers Morgan. So he walked and left the show, and then actually left the show. Like, he actually quit, whether they asked him to or not, I don't know, but he actually quit. And I just think that it's interesting how fragile men can be when it comes to being rejected by girls. That was one of the things I was trying to explain to someone when we were talking about, like, the difference between your interaction with women when you're married as opposed to when you're single. There's a thing that happens, right? And most people think it's a myth. If you haven't experienced it, most people think it's a myth. Matter of fact, there was a TV show, I think it was on Martin, and Cole was saying that he felt like as soon as he got married, the freak train was going to take off. He felt like as soon as he got married, the freak train was going to take off. All the women that he's been trying to get with and be, let's call it social, okay? all the women that he wanted to be social with were going to be ready to go. And just as they were ready to go, he got married. Now he's off the market. Probably not going to happen. But I do think that there is something that happens to certain women when they encounter a married man. I think that for certain women, when they see a married man, they see a couple of different things. One, they see something that they see a man that's ready to commit or willing to commit, right? And I think sometimes women go through relationships, and if they haven't found the one yet, they may feel like men are incapable of commitment, especially if it's a woman that's been cheated on before. She might easily feel like men are incapable of commitment. So you see a man who is willing and able to commit because they have. They committed their life to one person. So that's one thing that I think that single women see when they look at married men. And I just kind of stumbled into this topic. So we're just going to roll with it. Another thing I think women see when they look at a married man is a lack of commitment. They could be with someone or in a relationship with someone who they know is not in a position to commit to them. And so they don't have to commit to him either. And so they can have this kind of carefree, loveless, but favorable type of relationship with someone that they don't have to worry about getting their feelings hurt for, or so they think, right? They think, oh, here's a guy who's nice, who's willing to commit. He has a lot of the qualities that I like, and I could play around with this guy, essentially, and not worry about getting my feelings hurt because I know from the beginning there's a limit to how far this can go. This can only be a certain thing, right? And so I think a lot of women see that when they see a married man. Now, from the man's perspective, it's different from being a woman. As a woman, you grow up from a child being ready and knowing how to reject the other sex. You know what I mean? Like, from a time a girl is a little girl, she's like, little boy, get away from me. Little boy, get out of here. That's what my wife used to say to me all the time before we were dating. Her family and my family were always close. We go to the same church. And when we would be around each other and I would say something to her like, yo, when you gonna let me take you out? She'd be like, little boy, get away from me. Because she's older than me, right? So women are just good at that. Men are not good at, girl, get away from me. Girl, stop throwing yourself at me. Oh, stop touching me there. Men don't, you don't get practice doing that growing up. Most men don't get the practice of rejecting the opposite sex growing up. It's normally you're the aggressor, to use, you know, for lack of a better term. You're initiating the interaction, and the expectation is almost that you get rejected. But if the tables turn and you're in a position now where you are getting the attention and you have to learn how to develop that muscle of rejecting it, it's a huge flip. And I've seen it cause a lot of friction and a lot of problems in relationships because I don't think women understand what it takes from a male perspective to build that muscle. And I don't think women understand even the context of not having that muscle because it's something that they've always had. They developed it as a kid. Their parents taught it. Girl, get that boy away from you. Tell that boy stop messing with you. That boy don't need to be following you home. That boy don't need to be doing it. That boy don't need to be trying to play with you and blah, 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 blah. Whereas guys, you see a little guy, your little man, your son chasing a little girl. I'm like, oh, look at it, man. You ain't gonna touch that girl. Go get her, man. Go give her a hug. Go give her toy back. Go, you know what I mean? It's like encouraged to pursue, but never encouraged to, man, stay away from that girl. Girls ain't nothing but trouble. You know what I mean? Only person that encouraged us of that was Will Smith, and he didn't listen to that advice himself. He's in his own little entanglement, if you know what I mean. So I don't know. I think that Pierce in this situation, he doesn't know how to deal with the rejection of it all from a woman, clearly. And now that you see that woman go, you ever see your ex go on to somebody that you know is just better than you? You know what I mean? You know, like it's different if you work at Best Buy, right? And your girlfriend breaks up with you, and then she go, or a girl you were pursuing, you know, turns you down, and then she goes and like get with the manager of HH Gregg or something, or like Staples, or you know what I mean, Fry's Electronics. It's like, oh man, like she upgraded a little bit. That hurts a little bit. You know, she goes to get with the vice president of a company. It's like, the higher they go up after leaving you or after rejecting you, you just know, like, oh, I wasn't in her league. She went to the top. Like, she left Pierce and went straight to the royal family and was like, yo, I'm here now. I've arrived now. And obviously, Pierce doesn't know how to handle that. So, Pierce, go tuck yourself away in your hatred closet and do whatever it is you do in there. I don't even know what he's going to do now. I didn't know what he was doing before, quite honestly, but... enough about that, enough stalling. Let's talk about Coming to America, shall we? Now, here's what we're not gonna do. I'm not gonna stand on this great old internet and watch y'all slander the name of Eddie Murphy. Because here's what I thought. I'm gonna be honest with you. When I watched the movie, I watched it late Friday night. I got on the timeline expecting to see Coming to America trending number one, Eddie Murphy, Wesley Snipes perform. I came to see all of this love on the internet. And you know what I saw instead? I saw you idiots. Yeah, I'm talking to you. You idiots comparing the filmographies of Kevin Hart and Eddie Murphy. Hello? Are you kidding me? You're comparing Kevin Hart's filmography to Eddie Murphy's? This is my problem with you people. And yes, I'm saying you people. I'm saying you internet savages. That's who I'm talking to. You think Eddie Murphy needs to be in the same conversation of Kevin Hart as anything other than comedians? There's not a movie out or in development that's better than movies that Eddie Murphy has made. Show me one movie that compares to the original Coming to America that Kevin Hart's done. Show me one movie. Show me where Kevin Hart can even do the characters. Eddie Murphy sat at a table for 3 minutes in a movie scene by himself and had you rolling. He had everybody and their mama saying, you're gonna walk over, but you're gonna limp back. He had all y'all saying that. He did an entire scene by himself. He was Sherman Klump. He was the father. He was the mother. He was the brother. He was the grandmother. What do you want from this guy? What does Kevin have that compares to that? Kevin Hart is Kevin Hart in every movie he's in. And I love Kevin Hart. I don't want to shade Kevin Hart. But he's Kevin Hart in every movie that he's in. When have you ever seen Kevin Hart not be Kevin Hart? Go back and watch Paper Soldiers. By the way, Eddie doesn't have Paper Soldiers. I love Paper Soldiers. My first time seeing Kevin Hart on film, I loved it. Eddie ain't got a Paper Soldier, okay? Eddie came out hot. Eddie's first movie was what, 48 Hours? Brother came out hot. But if you watch the Kevin Hart in Paper Soldiers, and you watch the Kevin Hart in Soul Plane, and you watch the Kevin Hart in Fool's Gold, and you watch every movie he's been in with The Rock, he's the same guy. The only time he switched up his appearance or did a character, did anything other than himself, was when he did the Uber driver social media video. And even then, it was like, Kevin Hart, man. You know what I mean? Like, what movie does Kevin have that compares to The Nutty Professor? What does he have to compare to Beverly Hills Cop? What do you want to tell me? Ride Along? That's what you're giving me to Beverly Hills Cop. You're going to take Beverly and you're going to give me Ride Along? Which, by the way, he co-starred in with Ice Cube. You're going to give me Ride Along? What does he have? Even smaller movies that Eddie did, Distinguished Gentleman. Kevin ain't got nothing as good as Distinguished Gentleman. It's not a conversation. So I did not expect to get on this here internet and look at people trying to compare the movie careers of Eddie Murphy and Kevin Hart. I didn't even get to all the Eddie Murphy. Kevin don't even have a daddy daycare. Don't let me talk about Mulan and Shrek. Don't let me get in the animated bag. Yeah, Secret Life of Pets, okay, that was cool. Shrek? He was Donkey in Shrek? What? So anyway, that's not the reception that I decided, that I wanted to see on the internet. I decided to log out and not get back on because you guys made me hate it there. You people made me hate it there. But here's what I want to say about Coming to America. Impossible movie to make. We need to do a segment to talk about impossible movies to make. One movie that I thought was impossible to make was another Bad Boys. All the nostalgia movies, like when you try to take the old and you bring it into this new age where it's 20, 30 years later, impossible movies. Bad Boys was an impossible movie to make. Tom and Jerry was an impossible movie to make. And they shouldn't have made that movie. It's impossible. Coming to America, the sequel, was also an impossible movie to make, right? We're going to throw Tom and Jerry out because that was trash. They never should have did it. It was horrible. I don't ever want to see or hear of a Tom and Jerry again unless it's the cartoon, TV show. The movie sucked. Okay, got that out the way. Let's look at the differences between Bad Boys 4. Was it 4? Bad Boys 3. Bad Boys 4. I don't even remember. Bad Boys for Life. The latest one that came out in 2020. And then let's look at Coming to America, the sequel. Both are impossible movies to make. And here's what I mean by impossible. Once you let so much time pass, those movies get built up to be so much greater than what actually happened in the film, right? They start to take on this life of themselves, where they start to grow and attach themselves to certain parts of people's lives and personalities, right? Like, it was a lot of people that started to do the things in real life that they saw in these movies. For example, the first mic drop in history happened in Coming to America, the original one. Did you guys know that? Randy Watson in Sexual Chocolate, when he did the mic drop, where he just said something so dope that he dropped the mic and walked off stage, that was the first mic drop ever. This is in the 80s. Now, we got the president of the United States, former president, Obama, doing a mic drop. Obama out. When you reach something that's so big that it gets so widely known that you can't even trace it back to its origins, but it originated in this movie, it's just become its own thing now. And that was the difference between the original Coming to America and Bad Boys. Bad Boys, first of all, they had already did two of them, right? Relatively close, I think 4 years apart or something like that. And then they come out with another one. The problem with, or maybe it was 6 years apart, a little bit longer, but the problem with Bad Boys and Coming to America is Coming to America had built itself up to be a cult classic, to the point where people were dressing up like the characters in Coming to America, to the point where restaurants were turning themselves into a McDowell's, to the point where a lot of the jokes had become a part of the American lexicon. There was a lot of people saying, "What is this, velvet?" There was a lot of that, right? I don't think that happened with Bad Boys. Bad Boys is a classic. It's one of my favorite movies of all times. I don't think it became a cult classic where people were walking around trying to be Mike Lowry or Marcus Burnett. I don't think people were walking around saying, as a part of the lexicon, "Now that's how you drive. Every time you drive, you need to..." I don't think presidents were doing that. I don't think it reached the point of, you know, cult status to where it was just ingrained in how we do. Like, I don't know how many restaurants or whatever, or police stations changed themselves to match the movie. You get what I'm saying? And so on a scale of impossible movies, I think Bad Boys is on the scale, but I think the top of that chain is Coming to America. So they already had an impossible feat. People do yearly celebrations of Coming to America, right? And so that changes how you can do this movie. And a lot of the complaints I see from people, first of all, I think these people would have complained either way. But a lot of the complaints I see from people, I think it's because they were hindered with that impossibility. For example, Bad Boys was able to do some new stuff and kind of take a new spin on the storyline and develop it in a way that a lot of us didn't necessarily see coming. They were able to build on some of the old stuff, but they had to take it, they took it in a little bit of a different direction. If you do that with Coming to America, the sequel, and you try to make a new movie that's just slightly based in the old one, I think you lose everyone. Because all people want to do is to see a dope celebration of the first film, which is what we've been doing for the last 30 years since the first one came out. And those celebrations have just been getting bigger and bigger. We like to celebrate McDowell's. We like to celebrate the outfits. We like to celebrate the fly stuff that would have been going on. We saw Black Panther, and we saw how dope it was in Wakanda. And we started comparing Wakanda to where? Zamunda. We automatically started doing that, right? And so if I'm Eddie, and I'm Kenya Burris, and I'm Arsenio Hall, and I'm looking at this, I'm looking for a way to help celebrate the iconic movie that was the first one while also adding some new flair to it. So when we look at the movie, one complaint people had was that there were too many celebrity appearances. Oh, there was everybody over there. Gladys Knight, Morgan Freeman. First of all, if Zamunda actually existed in 2021, which is what they were trying to do, Do you not think all those people would be over there? It wasn't just random celebrities. It was black old money. Like Morgan Freeman been getting to the bag for a long time. Gladys Knight has been getting to the bag for a long time. They are legendary. You throw salt and pepper in there, legendary. Like, these are legendary, iconic groups. And if the King of Zamunda was dying, and you had to pick somebody to do the eulogy, wouldn't it be Morgan Freeman? Isn't that who you'd pick? A lot of you say all the time, man, I would want Morgan Freeman to be my voicemail. Man, I would want Morgan Freeman to read the eulogy at my funeral. Well, if you're the King of Zamunda, you can actually do that. And so they did. By the way, I thought it was hilarious for the King of Zamunda to have his funeral. Like, he knew his funeral was going to be so dope that he didn't want to miss it. He was like, you know, I'm going to die soon. Let's have my funeral now so I can see how dope this is going to be. It's going to be a great celebration. And then to have the beautiful, sultry voice of Gladys Knight usher you in to heaven with her own rendition of her own song, and that be the way you go. Like, who wouldn't want that? If you had Zamunda money, if you were the King of Zamunda, that's exactly what you do. So that's the first part of the movie. They show the king is dying, and that's how that the celebration comes in. Morgan Freeman's doing a eulogy. Gladys Knight's there. Salt and pepper. It's a big celebration. It's, you know, celebrities are there. Like, I feel like if Jay-Z and Beyonce did this right now in real life, just because it was a party, and Morgan Freeman narrated the party, and Gladys Knight did a remake of her own song, but customized it to Jay-Z and Beyonce, and Salt and pepper were there, and all these musical performances, everybody on the internet would be going crazy. But Eddie did it, and people were like, oh, no, I didn't want a lot of celebrities in music. What? Shut up and get out of here forever, please. Like, what's the problem? What's the problem, right? So then the movie presents a problem, which you got to have a problem, right? You have to have a reason for him to go back to America. So then it turns out that when he came to America the first time, he did more than come to America. He came in America. If you saw the movie, you know exactly what I'm talking about. He didn't just come to America to find him a bride and Lisa McDowell and live happily after. There was one of those nights when they went to the club where he brought something back home, got a little high, right? Didn't realize he was smoking weed because he's not from America. Hey, they didn't have this back home. So smoked weed, got high, ended up having sex with Leslie Jones's character, who, by the way, was amazing. All the comedians in this movie did a great job. Right. Tracy Morgan did a great job. Leslie Jones, Colin Jost did a great job. I thought Trevor Noah character was kind of like a spoof, a SNL spoof, but I thought he did a great job. He was funny. There was a couple of other comedians that were in there that I thought was funny. I can't think of their names right now, but all the comedians did a great job. Lunell, that's who I was forgetting. Lunell, she did a great job. She had a small role, but still really funny in the movie. Arsenio, of course, Eddie, of course. But they get to the point where he finds out that he had sex with someone and that he has a son, right? And people are criticizing, like, how fast he found out he had a son, went back to America, and got the son. I understand that. That was one role where I'm like, okay, You're not gonna do like a paternity test or nothing to figure out whether or not this is actually your son. Like, that's what I'm thinking. It's 2021. I get that you got this Zamunda money and they made you a sketch, and the sketch looked just like the kid, and they've been keeping tabs on him, whatever. The only way I can justify that part of the movie, right? And if you're knocking that part of the movie, I'm actually not even mad at you. That whole storyline seemed to be rushed. But the reason why it was rushed is because Eddie had a bounty on his hand. Prince Hakeem had a bounty on his head. Because he didn't have a son to take over the kingdom, they were obviously going to kill him. Chief Izzy, which is Wesley Snipes' character, which I hope Wesley Snipes gets more work after this, just because people see how brilliant he can be. Like, of course, it's a comedy, so his role is very, like, you know, it's a stupid role. The whole movie is stupid, first of all. I learned through this process that people don't know what a comedy is. It's not an action comedy. It's not a rom-com. It's not like, it's just a comedy. Comedies are supposed to be just stupid. Will Ferrell does it all the time, and no one says a thing. It's supposed to be just stupid. It's a series of good, funny bits that are stupid, right? And of course, in this one, they had some romance in there. There was a love story. That's always the backbone to Coming to America. But overall, it's a comedy. It's a bunch of jokes. That's what the first one was. It was a comedy. It was a bunch of jokes. So I understand that why people say they were rushed, but I also think that they rushed it because at this point, Eddie didn't even care if it was his real DNA, like biological son. At this point, he just needed a son to stand in his place so that he could stay alive. So I'm good with that part of the movie. And then you have the prince come back to Zamunda, and he had to go through an adjustment period. And I thought that was dope. I thought the way that they took him through that, of course, some obvious storylines was, you know, he was going to fall into this arranged marriage and rebel against it and go find the woman of his dreams. But we knew that before we ever saw the movie. That's what the first movie was about. And so there's a lot more. I won't go into every single detail. I just wanted to address some of the things that people had issue with. They had issue with the celebrity appearances. The only one that was like absolutely unnecessary, I think, was Dikembe Mutombo just being there. But at the same time, like, I don't know, Mutombo would probably be in Zamunda. He'd probably be just hanging out over there chilling, right? So I thought that was one. I thought that one was unnecessary. Some of the other criticisms were like, how they just did a bunch of old jokes and how they, you know, look, here's the thing about that. When it's a sequel and the only way you could do the movie is celebrate by celebrating the old one and paying homage to the old one, they're going to have to acknowledge some of the old jokes. You guys wanted to see that. If they didn't do that and they ignored it all together, you guys would say that the two are not connected and that it wasn't as good. Like, you still would have the same complaints. And so I like that they called it out. They even called out like, hey, we probably shouldn't even be doing this movie. They even had that in the script. Like, yeah, the best way to ruin a classic movie is to do a remake or a sequel 30 years later that nobody asked for. Like, they literally said that in the film. So it's all like on the nose. Like, they know that they're not supposed to be doing this film, but if they're gonna do it because the people want it, which we did, they're gonna do it in a way that it's a celebration of the first one. And so I thought they did a great job. I watched the movie twice, mostly because I knew I was going to talk about it on the podcast. So I wanted to come back in and like see if I missed anything. It was still funny the second time. There was some hilarious. Everything that Izzy did, Wesley Snipes' character, I thought was super hilarious. There was every time the barbers were in the scene was hilarious. Seeing the Eddie Murphy's character, Randy Watson, come back in Sexual Chocolate and seeing them in Zamunda and seeing like how the people from Queens were going crazy, but the people in Zamunda, you know, they're used to like Gladys Knight coming to perform and like all these, you know, they're used to all of that. Tiana Taylor looked great, right? I thought the way that they brought back some of the old characters that you just did not expect, like the Rapping Twins, them coming back and doing a little, like, I just thought the whole thing was great. I thought they did a great job. I thought it was a good, solid movie. Is it better than the first one? Of course not. Nothing's ever going to be. But that's not what we're trying to do. They did a good job of making a movie that was palatable for today's youth. The people who were the age you were when you saw the first one, they're going to love this movie, even if they haven't seen the first one, because you get a good, healthy balance of both. And I like some of the new characters that they ushered into the franchise to say, like, hey, here's some new talent that you should be looking out for, or here's some old talent that doesn't get the the looks that they should be getting, like Wesley Snipes, like Leslie Jones. And so I thought they did a great job. I think you should definitely check out the movie if you haven't checked it out. Well worth the watch. I watched it twice. I'll probably watch it again. I thought it was just a hilarious movie. It made me laugh. I thought it was great. Okay. With that being said, let's end the show on a segment that we all find enjoyable. At least I hope so. And that segment is called Marriage Advice Nobody Asked For. Marriage Advice That Nobody Asked For. For those of you who don't know, in this segment, I go to one of my favorite social media apps, Reddit. And I'm in a couple of different marriage groups on there, and I like listening to people talk about their marriage situation. I love relationships. I love to talk about relationships. I love to hear about relationships. And I love to solve relationships problems or to give some advice. And so I wanted to bring one to you guys that I thought was interesting. And the title of this one is, How Do Married People Manage to Get Out of the Bed in the Morning? Now, right off the top, you could tell, like, this one can go a couple of different ways. Right? How do you even manage? Like, marriage could be so bad that you could say, how do I even get out of bed in the morning? Like, I am miserable. I do not like this guy. I do not like this. Like, how do you even get out of the bed in the morning? Marriage could be so challenging that it's maybe not each other, but just the things that life is throwing at you. You're like, just, I can't take anymore. Like, how do I even get out of bed in the morning? Or marriage could be so good that you guys are in so much bliss, right? And so much love and so much energy between you guys. And you're like, I just don't want to let you go. I don't want to get out of bed and go to work. And let's see which one this one is. So I'll read it to you. Newly married here. The bed with my spouse is the best place in the world.
Aww.
Unlimited cuddles. He wakes up late and I find myself waking up late too, especially when he cuddles me. My productivity has been hit big time. How do you guys do it? Well, let me tell you. This one is interesting to me. And the reason why I picked one is this. My grandfather specifically gave my wife advice to let me go to work in the morning. Because she literally did not want me to get out of bed. She wanted me to lay there and 5 more minutes and just hold me, give me a hug, give me a kiss. Why do you have to go to work so early? Do you have to go in today? Matter of fact, I'm going to call her and see if she remembers this. Uh-oh. I could be getting myself into trouble right now. I'm going to call her and see if she remembers this. Calling my wife live on the podcast, see if she remembers. She's at work, so she might not be able to answer. By the way, she doesn't listen to my podcast at all. I don't even know if she knows I do this segment. But this would be hilarious if she answered. Because I want to see if she remembers this. She didn't answer. But you know how sometimes in your marriage you remember something and your wife remembers it slightly differently. And you're right, but she won't give it to you. My grandfather had to tell her, you got to let that man go. You got to let that man go to work. Because if you don't, y'all not going to have no bed to lay in. So what I'm saying is, I completely understand being in this position as newlyweds. As far as advice on what to do, just keep laying down, going to sleep, waking up. It'll wear off. Not saying that you'll never be like that again. It'll wear off, though. There's going to be some times when you're not overly happy with your spouse. There's going to be some times where you don't even want to be in the bed next to that guy. There's going to be some times where you're going to look at him and you're going to be like, who is this? I don't even know who I'm married to right now. There's going to be some times where you're going to wish you had two beds, where you would literally contemplate going to the hardware store, buying a chainsaw, and cutting your bed in half just so you can get some distance between you and that joke over there. There's going to be some times where you're going to want to bring your own cover, your own blankie, your own comforter to the bed just to wrap yourself in it. Women, you ever do this move in the bed where you're like, laying down, you got your back to him, right? And you like cuffing the cover under you just so he knows where the line is. It's like when you put a dog on an invisible fence and it shocks them when they get too close. Women do that in a bed where they put this little line right there where you cannot cross this mark. This is the gun line. You guys seen life? That's the gun line, boss. You can't cross the gun line here at Camp 8. with, like, there's going to be a time where you just don't want to be that close to your husband, even if it's temporarily, right? Sometimes I host weddings. And in weddings, you know, you're the host and you like to keep it light. You like to have fun and move on with the ceremony. Host wedding receptions, I should say. And I always make the joke, and it's a true story, but it just happens to be funny, is that my grandparents gave us the advice to never go to bed angry. And I took that to heart. Like, we cannot go to bed while I'm still angry. And the first time I got angry, I stayed up for like 72 hours because I couldn't go to sleep angry, right? And then I was like, now I understand that better. But at the time, I took that literally. There's going to be some times where you just don't want to be next to this person. So as far as advice on how to get over it and be more productive and go to work and all those things, just give it some time. It'll wear off. Now, if you're a special case and you're like, look, we've been married 2 or 3 years and I still feel this way. I'm on a write-up at my job because I'm always late and all these things. Here's my advice. Have a kid. Have a baby. The whole game changes. Have a kid that wants to wedge themselves into your bed and sleep in the middle of you. Look, my niece spent the night last night. If you don't have a kid, go borrow a kid. They got kids you can borrow. Go borrow a kid. I borrowed a kid last week. My niece came over. She spent the night. She was laying like perpendicular to me somehow and kept sticking her toes in my ribs. Like, for whatever reason, she wanted to lay the opposite way. Like, everybody else's head is up here. She wants to lay like long ways in between me and my wife, and just the whole night dug her little baby toes, a little cute toes. You know, you look at the toes. Her little toes was like daggers in my side the whole night. I couldn't wait to get out of that bed. I'm pretty sure I woke up an hour early and just looked at her like, So if you can't get over it, go to rentakid.com, okay? You can borrow a kid overnight, 24 hours, right? And, I shouldn't joke like that. That actually may be a website. I don't mean that. I mean, like, go find a kid, a dog or something that will lay in the bed with you. You may find out that this bed isn't all of what you think it should be. And if that doesn't work, just start sleeping on your box spring. I don't know. It's not that comfortable. Fall asleep on the couch together over 30. You know, like, that's just something me and my wife did this weekend. We watched Coming to America. We had food. We had drinks. We laid out. We watched a couple of things. The next thing you know, we both sleep on the couch after 30. Ruined our whole weekend. Couldn't walk straight all weekend. Couldn't walk straight all weekend. So, you know, that's marriage advice nobody asked for. I hope you guys enjoy this segment. My favorite segment on the podcast. I love doing it. And hopefully you'll buy my marriage book one day. It'll be right on the shelf next to Steve Harvey's. I don't have as many marriages as him, but I do have some advice for you. And that's it. So I hope you guys enjoyed listening to that and watching today's episode. Check us out on our YouTube page if you want to see the full video episode of this. Also, we upload clips there. And also check out the In My Own Words Shorts page. It's really short, 30-second or less clips that we post in a vertical format for the new platform of YouTube Shorts. So check that out as well. I'll see you guys next week. Peace. Thank you.